Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and blessings, and welcome to another installment of the Gist of Freedom Estate. This show is produced by acclaimed historian, educator, and author Leslie Gist, and serves as our weekly live online discussion to celebrate the African American experience by honoring all the people, past and present, black and white, who, with faith and focus, are preserving our rich history through literature, the arts, the skilled trades, and the humanities. We thank you for joining us tonight, and we'd love you to be a part of tonight's discussion by calling in with your comments or questions to 347-324-5552.
To deliver this message.
This meeting is being recorded.
Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you are watching this video. We greet you with warm blessings and greetings. I'm your host, Jamal Brown, a.k.a. Mr. Black365, founder and creator of the Black365 calendar and a whole host of other products. You are listening to the Gist of Freedom radio show. You can find our past shows at blackhistoryuniversity.com, blackhistoryuniversity.com. I don't want to take too much time by way of introduction. I want to introduce tonight's topic. Tonight we'll be discussing a range of individuals who have impacted the labor movements, civil rights movements, and human rights movements. Today's date, I hate time stamping these, but today's date is Thursday, September 3rd, 2020, and this coming weekend will be an extended weekend. Because it's the COVID era, the COVID year, I'm not too sure how many barbecues and cookouts and hangouts there will be, but that is traditionally something that we see on this particular weekend. And it is a little known fact that individuals of African descent have made a huge impact by way of labor movements and labor organizing. And we're going to showcase a few of those individuals here tonight. Without any further ado, let's get into the visuals. Here is a name that has been thrust into the public conversation as of late. You must be living under a rock if you have not heard of the name Jacob Blake. One thing that you may not know is that there was another Jacob Blake. That's right. The Jacob Blake who in Kenosha was shot in the back 7 times. His grandfather also had the name Jacob Blake. And let me tell you a little bit about this man and the organizing skills, abilities, and contributions that he has. He was active in the civil rights movement in the 60s and 70s. He led marches in the wake of the killing of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in the state of Illinois. If you perhaps recall, actually a little known fact that Martin Luther King, along with his wife, lived in broken down housing tenements in Chicago, in Illinois, to bring attention to the plight of those living in substandard housing conditions in Illinois. I've seen photos of the housing that Martin Luther King lived in while in Chicago. The entire facing of certain buildings was torn off. And we all know the moniker of, you know, the Windy City and how cold it gets in Chicago. And so imagine living in the winter with no heat, with part of the building exposed. Again, Martin Luther King lived his life dedicated to the plight of African individuals, black people. And so he made a tremendous impact in the Chicago area. Well, I'm not sure, but I'm thinking that's where he crossed paths with Mr. Reverend Jacob Blake. And so Jacob Blake certainly championed the quest, championed the message of one Dr. Martin Luther King, and led substantial enormous marches in the wake of the killing of Dr. Martin Luther King. Another fact about Reverend Jacob Blake, he spearheaded efforts to change Evanston, Illinois' housing laws, again, championing the efforts and the energy and the quest and message of a Dr. Martin Luther King. Reverend Jacob Blake, again, did great work by way of housing. He has a lasting legacy in Evanston, Illinois, because there are buildings that bear his name. He helped establish two senior housing buildings that provide subsidized apartments to seniors. So, again, people today live inside of the Jacob Blake buildings. Again, buildings that honor him, buildings that have his name attached to him. There's a saying that many of you know that necessity is the mother of all invention. Well, I like to say that necessity is the mother of all protest as well. When there is a great need, we see the people most affected by that need rise up, organize, voice their opinions, voice their concerns, voice their demands, and ultimately those demands and those voices that are raised changed to action. And again, it's the action of some, like a Mr. Reverend Jacob Blake, that have lasting effects. He was a pastor at this church here, which still stands to this day, the Ebenezer African Methodist Episcopal Church in Evanston, Illinois. Still stand to this day. Some beautiful stained glass windows there. Next up, I want to talk to you about this man, Jacob Myers. Jacob Myers. Again, when you're eating those hot dogs, those hamburgers, or grilled zucchini or corn, whatever it is that is your flavor, think of this man as you enjoy your three-day weekend and on Labor Day. His name is Isaac Myers. Isaac Myers, a name that perhaps is not known to many of us, but a name that should be known to all of us. Let me go back here. Isaac Myers and others established the Colored Caulkers Trade Union Society in the year 1868, to which he was elected the president. So there were, he was born a free man. All people are born free. However, some people are born and enslaved. He was born but never enslaved, despite the fact that he lived in Maryland, the state, as you know, that had enslaved Africans. He was not enslaved. And so he got an education early and began working in shipyards. He and others had jobs. There were over 1,000 individuals of African descent, black men, who worked in this particular shipping yard or in the shipping areas here in the Baltimore area. However, a group of whites who were out of jobs came in and simply kicked the brothers out of their jobs. This did not sit well, as you can imagine, with one Isaac Myers. And so he and others, again, began to form a union. They wanted rights. They wanted protection. They wanted laws established so that their right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness cannot be trampled on. And so, again, he established a Caulkers Trade Union, one of the earliest unions here in the state, here in this country, I should say. He was the first known African-American postal inspector as well. There are some giants that live amongst us, some Renaissance people. In an earlier broadcast, we talked about Imhotep, the world's first Renaissance man. In a previous broadcast, we talked about Paul Robeson, yet another Renaissance man. Time and time again, as we turn through the pages of history, as we look back in the annals of history, we see these people who almost loom larger than life, who truly made the best of their 24 hours. Each and every one of us has 24 hours in a day, 365 days in a year, 366 on leap year. But how fulfilled, how efficient, effective, how productive we choose to spend our seconds, minutes, hours, days, weeks, months, and years truly will dictate how history remembers us. Isaac Myers, despite the fact that he's not well known, but I'm going to do my best here at the Just the Freedom Radio Show. We're doing our best to broadcast, to highlight, to shine a spotlight on these individuals who have lived great and mighty lives. Again, it seemed like almost in a second lifetime that he became America's first African-American postal inspector. But again, he was an early trade union organizer. Frederick Douglass, who is the individual who preceded him as the president of the union. And there is the Frederick Douglass Isaac Myers Maritime Park in Baltimore that is named in honor of this man here. We all know the name of Frederick Douglass, a great and mighty warrior, a great and mighty individual, but we should all also know the name of Isaac Myers, truly a giant amongst men. Again, there would be, I won't say no black union workers, but I would say the progress that was made, the pace was quickened by one Isaac Myers, and we truly appreciate and honor Isaac Myers for his contribution. Yet, in steel, we have more names. Has the name Reverend Walter A. Rice ever come across your Facebook, your social media, anywhere? Has it ever came across your textbook? I must admit, it hadn't came across mine until I began doing research along with Just the Freedom Radio Show host, there's Leslie Just the Freedom. She introduced me to this man, truly, truly a giant amongst men as well. Here's a bust of him. His name again, Reverend Walter A. Rice, born in Lawrence, South Carolina in 1845. He was a volunteer with the Union Army during the American Civil War. After the war, he went to went to the New Jersey area. There he opened up a school to educate black children. Education of black children, as we know, has been difficult. Separate but equal did not mean equal for us. Separate but equal, in theory, made sense. It was created to insulate our people from the horrors of racism, from the horrors of brutality, from teachers, from students, from family members of those students who did not want us to get an education. So to insulate, to isolate us from that, again, separate but equal schooling was created. However, dilapidated buildings, old books, whole schools being condensed into one classroom, that was the reality that we faced. And Walter Rice understood that. And so he wanted to create, and he did in fact create, a world-class educational facility with world-class education, with world-class educators in the New Jersey area. Just take a look at this photo here. Here is a photo of the campus of the educational facility that our brother created. Let's take a look at one of the remaining buildings here. It was known as the Bordentown School, but affectionately known throughout the community and affectionately known by black people as the Tuskegee of the North. We all know the Tuskegee Institute in Tuskegee, Alabama, created by the incomparable Booker T. Washington. That was the institution that taught some of the most practical things that you can think of, how to feed, how to clothe, and how to house black people is what the Tuskegee Institute truly, truly was based on when you break it down to its smallest parts. And the Bordentown, created by our brother Rice, essentially had as its mission the same exact thing. Take a look at the school's mission. The school's mission was to train African-American students in industries that shall enable them to become self-supportive and self-supporting. Self-determination, Kuji Chagaliya, truly is something that we should aspire to, something that we should be seeking to attain each and every day. Every living organism on the planet has as its main mission self-preservation. And then it should, in fact, be our mission as well. Self-preservation, supporting of self. I'm not talking about doing away with allies and doing away with others that want to support us, but doing for self should be the motto, should be the mission. And it's admirable, and it only makes sense. That truly was the mission of this school. Let me tell you a little bit more about this amazing school. The school was praised by both Booker T. Washington and W.E.B. Du Bois. If you know anything about history, you know anything about these two titans, these two giants, these two personalities, you know that they did not agree on much of anything. One from the North, one from the South. One believed in agricultural and self-sufficiency. Another one believed in social integration and what have you. And so for these two gentlemen to agree that this school created by our brother Walter Rice was truly something phenomenal, truly something exceptional, truly something that was needed, tells you all that you need to know about the great work that this school was doing. The boys had a curriculum and the girls had a curriculum. You've got to understand that in this time, the idea or the concept of a co-ed school was few and far between. Oftentimes, the sex were separated. So there was, in fact, a separate curriculum for boys and girls. They said the young men were to be taught agricultural, taught the fundamentals of auto mechanics and how to operate steam boiler rooms, along with Latin, along with other foreign languages and your math and what have you. They had electronic radio. They had maritime navigation. They built everything. When I talk about self-sufficiency, when I talk self-determination, I mean everything needed to own and operate a nation, own and operate and lead forward a people. Every aspect of that was taught at this school. Everything you needed to know about how to own and operate a nation was done there. The instructors lived on campus. Those who attended on scholarship had to maintain the community garden, which fed those who lived on the campus and those in the surrounding area as well. I mean, these are, in this day and age, what would be considered forward-thinking models, forward-thinking approaches, aspects and realities that should be created today. There's a brother whose name is escaping me right now. His last name is Sorrels. He is the president of a college in Texas. Hopefully by the end of the show I can get it. Sorrels, S-O-R-R-E-L-L-S, I believe is his last name. He's the president of a college, and he recently in the past few years, began a program where he did away with the football field, did away with the football team, defunded the football team because they were no good anyway, and created a situation where the football field and the practice fields were turned into community gardens, and the students operate and maintain the community gardens. Again, it seemed as if it was a revolutionary thought, and indeed it was a revolutionary thought. However, it does not go without precedent, because our brothers and sisters at this time, at this school, were doing that as well. It was originally called the New Brunswick Technical Institute before it moved to the Bordentown name. In a few moments, I want to talk to you about some famous alumni students and some famous alumni professors as well. The girls' curriculum included beauty culture, dressmaking, sewing as well. Again, knowing how to sew a button is something that's revolutionary today. I don't know too many folks who know how to sew a button. If this button fell off my shirt right now, I'd probably, you know, I'm sad to say it, but I'd probably throw the whole shirt away. But if you attended this school at this time, you were taught the basics of, again, how to run a nation. There was a documentary done on Walter Rice and this astounding, outstanding institution as well. It is called A Place Out of Time, the Bordentown School, and is narrated by the Queen, Ruby Dee. We know Ruby Dee, the phenomenal actress, phenomenal scholar, phenomenal force, and by way of civil rights and others, married to the great, why escaping? Ozzie Davis. Ozzie Davis, the brother who was a great, phenomenal actor in his own right and provided the eulogy for us for our shining prince, Malcolm X. Again, these things that I'm talking to you about, agricultural, auto mechanics, steam boiler operation, beauty culture, dressmaking, sewing, let me just provide some context for you. This was not taught at the other schools. These were aspects of civilization, aspects of culture, aspects of society that Walter Rice, the visionary, and others sought to allow our children to have a foundation on. just making it so forth. Again, all these were well-paying, high-paying careers. As you know, oftentimes our people were in the service-based industry. We were chauffeurs and what have you. And so knowing that, being a chauffeur was a common career path for Black men at that time, teaching the brothers the basics and fundamentals of auto mechanics was to allow our brothers at that time to be more desirable, more sought after in terms of gaining employment. That is something to behold. The school was closed, unfortunately, eventually due to reverse discrimination. Can you believe that? New Jersey passed laws that banning schools that were based simply on race. And so our great institution here, the Bordentown Institute, was eventually defunded as a result of efforts, essentially Brown versus the Board of Education, but in reverse. Again, there were still racist white schools, all white schools, that were ignored as far as the law goes. However, the law, as we sometimes know, is selectively applied, and unfortunately, the eyes of the law turned to this great institute and closed the school. And today, the school still exists in a dilapidated state, some parts of it, and is being used as a prison, a detention center for young adults. Truly, truly, truly a reversal, truly, truly something that is sad and unfortunate, the demise of the school. But it should serve as a shining light. It should serve as a guiding star to us today, especially today when we're talking about COVID, especially today when we're talking about how schooling will look moving forward, virtual, smaller classrooms, boarding schools perhaps. Again, we can look back, as the concept of Sankofa illustrates for us, go forward by looking back, or go back and fetch it in order to do what you have to do and live an abundant life. Go back and learn from the best of our ancestors what they did in order to move forward. As I mentioned, I was going to tell you about some of the notable alumni who have attended this school. Ethel Cuff Black, one of the founders of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority. Mae Edward Chin, the first Black woman to graduate from Bellevue Hospital. George Franklin Grant, inventor of the golf tee, went there, again, as a child. He eventually went and was one of the first two individuals, Black individuals, to be accepted to Harvard Dental School. George Franklin Grant, dentist. George Franklin Grant, inventor of the golf tee. Mind you, he invented this golf tee at a time when Black people weren't even allowed to be on golf courses. I oftentimes say that reality, truth, history is sometimes more fascinating than fiction. George W. Haley, former United States ambassador to the Gambia and the brother of the famed Alex Haley, author of Roots, author of the autobiography of Malcolm X. His brother attended this school. Let me take one more look at some notable faculty, and then we'll go back and show a few more pictures as we recap. Lester Granger, one of the original founders of the National Urban League, was a faculty member there. William H. Hastie, the first governor of the United States, first African-American governor of U.S. Virgin Islands, of the U.S. Virgin Islands, was a faculty member at this school. Let's take a look back at these photos here. Again, my name is Jamal Brown, a.k.a. Mr. Black 365, founder and creator of the Black 365 calendar and other products found at black365.com, black365.com. And you are listening to the Gist of Freedom radio show. You have your choice of over 500 shows. That's right. Not 100, not 200, not 300, not 400, but 500 shows are recorded at the blackhistoryuniversity.com. Gist of Freedom radio show. There you can check out those shows. again, also on iHeartRadio as well. This university, not university, it was for young people, created by Reverend Walter A. Rice. They hosted large track meets, regional track meets, tennis meets, all sort of athletic competitions. Again, this gentleman right here, who we see the bust of, sprawling campus, had several outbuildings and auxiliary buildings where teaching went on. Here you can see some of the farming. Here you can see some of the farming as well, the fields here, all sorts of things. This truly was a mecca, truly was a paradise, truly was a shining star in terms of educational facilities for us and by us. Bordentown School, a.k.a. the Tuskegee of the North School's mission was to teach and train and create African-American students and prepare them for the industries that so allow them to be self-supporting, self-sufficient. Albert Einstein visited and frequented the campus. The campus offered scholarships and offered guest lecture spots. And so they truly had the best of the best when it came to educating our children. That seems like a place I would want to go to today. Again, a few, just recapping real fast here, W.E.B. Du Bois, Booker T. Washington saw that it was an institute that should be of worthy of high praise. There was a boys' curriculum, a girls' curriculum. There's a documentary that you can check out. Each and every one of our shows, we try to provide you with a statue that you can go visit, a documentary or film that you can reference, as well as much, much more. Again, some of the notable alumni and some of the notable faculty. Next, I want to tell you about this giant, this Sandy Cornish. Again, a name that your history book oh so conveniently left out. He was born in Maryland, 1793, earned money, and you were talking about labor, right? And so he was born, as I mentioned earlier, Maryland was a state that had enslaved Africans. Unfortunately, our brother Sandy was enslaved. His overseer, plantation owner, sent him to Florida, Key West, Florida, to be a part of the railroad creation. We think we've heard through our history books that there was a certain race, Japanese, who built all the railroads in all of America. But I'm here to let you know that that was not, in fact, the case. Our brother Sandy Cornish, as well as other Africans, built the railroads. I am reading a book right now. I believe it's called Black Titan. It's about a brother named Gaston, G-A-S-T-O-N, Gaston Gaston. He, too, was a railroad worker. And so this was no easy task. There was lots that went into railroad making, from the hard labor to knowing how to work with explosives, to learn how to know. Again, this was high tech of the day. This is high technology, high science of the day, engineering, math, science, all went into this work. Again, Sandy Cornish was no dummy. He was somewhat of a Granville T. Woods as well. You know Granville T. Woods, who sued Thomas Edison, Granville T. Woods had a lot to do, has several patents, many dealing with train coupling and the communication between trains. Trains were not able to communicate with one another before it was our brother Granville T. Woods. So again, when we talk about train making in railroad creation, we're talking about high science, high mathematics. I misspoke that Thomas Edison sued Granville T. Woods, attempting to block some of his patents. But again, Granville T. Woods has a number of patents. Let me make sure I'm crystal clear here. Thomas Edison tried to use his resources to stop, to halt, to pause the progress of our brother Granville T. Woods. He had his money, he had his attorneys, he had all the backing, he had the skin for the win. However, he did not win when he attempted to sue our brother Granville T. Woods, because he was able to show beyond a shadow of a doubt that it was his inventions, his contributions that enabled, again, trains to communicate from one to another, trains to communicate to a station and have that communication sent back to this, to the trains. Thomas Edison begged Granville T. Woods to join forces with them, but the brother by and large, stayed independent. He remained independent for sure. Our brother Sandy Cornish, while he worked in Key West, Florida, was able to earn and save $600 a year. And now he did this for 9 years, day in, day out, can't see in the morning, can't see at night, was able to earn and save $600 a year for 9 years. With that money, the brother purchased his freedom. In a twisted act, in a twisted role, in a twisted chance or fate, the brother's freedom papers were burned in a fire. Then came along some individuals with the title of slave catcher and recaptured our brother Sandy Cornish. Can you imagine? Just let that sink into your soul, the words that are coming out of my mouth. You were born, you were enslaved, you were shipped halfway across the country from Maryland to Florida. You worked day in, day out, earning, saving, securing your freedom, only to have the one document most precious to you be burned in a fire, and someone comes along and seeks to re-enslave you. I cannot begin to imagine. I don't know what actions I would have taken. However, I will tell you the actions that our brother Sandy Cornish took. His brother made a public spectacle, one of those hear ye, hear ye, come one, come all, made a public announcement, called for individuals to come to a certain place in town on a particular day, and in front of everyone, black and white audience, the brother took out a knife, stabbed himself in the leg to the point where his thigh muscle was severed, stabbed himself in the ankle, and cut off one of his fingers. The brother said, I won't go back by any means necessary. I will be free. Now, he had a wife. I believe her name is Lilith. He, from what I understand, purchased her freedom as well. And so in the time in which he purchased his freedom, established a home for himself, married his wife, only to be recaptured, only to be forced back into enslavement, the brother damaged himself to the point where he would be no good as an enslaved person, thus ensuring his freedom. His friends who were at this public spectacle had to carry the brother away in a wheelbarrow. The brother eventually sewed his finger back on, and his other wounds healed to the point where he was able to live a free, proud, and productive life. A free, proud, and productive life. Again, the brother made, to me, an ultimate sacrifice, literally talking about risking life and limb. What he was doing, he did not go insane. This was an act of bravery. This was an act of intelligence. What he was doing was to make sure that he was no good to any white person. He said, I'm not going to be good to you, and this is what I'm going to do. You cannot insure me. You cannot find value in me. Let me go and live my life for myself and for my people. That's what he did by stabbing himself in the thigh, stabbing himself in the ankle, cutting off a finger. Sandy Cornish, here there is a bust dedicated to the brother there in Key West, Florida. Go check it out if you are in the area. This brother right here, when I was researching statues, I was surprised at this. I don't know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that the individuals responsible for creating this statue know Denmark Vesey like I know Denmark Vesey. But let me just tell you what the few of the things that were that are known about him. You see in this wonderful statue that exists in South Carolina, Charleston, I believe, he's holding a bag and holding his hat and holding a book as well. Our brother was a carpenter, as well as a preacher. as well as an organizer. That book in his hand, in fact, is the Bible, again, representative of the fact that he was a pious brother, a devout brother, a religious, spiritual brother. And again, he's holding the tools of the working bag of a craftsman, of a carpenter. However, this brother, his life, his legacy to me means so much more than that of a carpenter. And I'll tell you why. In these books right here, he was born in St. Thomas. However, he was reared in Bermuda, where he was enslaved. By stroke of genius, by stroke of grace, by stroke of God, by stroke of luck, whatever you want to attribute it to, the brother won a lottery and won $1,500 in that lottery. He was able to purchase his freedom for $600. He was a carpenter. He was a messenger. He was a messiah, just like Jesus Christ. And he was blessed just like Jesus as well. The brother won a lottery. He was able to purchase his freedom for $600. And he was working in Charleston, South Carolina, purchased his freedom there, was highly active in the AME church. This church was accepted and appreciated by black and white alike. It was the largest in the area, largest outside of Mother Bethel AME there in Philadelphia. And people came from far and wide. But people began to become a little suspicious about this church. They say it was shut down on a few occasions because they said that it was teaching black people how to read. So for some time, the church was shut down. It would reopen. It was shut down again. They said that it was a gathering of people after sundown. Again, sundown towns were a real thing all across this country where black people had to be indoors before sundown. There's a city here that's near me in the Los Angeles area known as Hawthorne. Hawthorne today is a very liberal and nice place to live. People were moving to Hawthorne in droves at this point. But Hawthorne, California, was indeed a sundown town. This concept existed, saying that individuals of African descent could not gather, could not congregate, could not come together after sundown because you just don't know what they're up to. So his church was shut down for that. I'm not sure if this triggered the brother, or if he had these thoughts all along. The brother began devising a plan to liberate African people by force. The brother created a detailed plan to be executed on July 14th, the year is escaping me at this exact moment. But on July 14th, the brother wanted to gather up arms, kill the white people in town, and escape en masse from Charleston, South Carolina, down into Florida, escape through Florida to awaiting boats in the Atlantic or the Caribbean Ocean to take our brothers and sisters to Haiti. As you may know, 1804, Haiti became the first nation on this planet, then or to today, of formerly enslaved people who took their liberty by force, threw off the chains, broke the manacles of enslavement, and became a free, proud, productive, and self-governing people. Our brother Denmark Vesey, again, born in the island, so he knew of the rumblings. He knew of the buck-breaking plantations. He knew of some of the harshest conditions that at a time, Jamaica and Haiti and other places in the Caribbean, the lifespan, the expected lifespan was 7 years. Because our brothers and sisters were being worked literally to death. Excavations of our brothers and sisters have shown where their thigh muscles and biceps muscles ripped from the bones. We see protracted, diminished jaw structure showing the levels of malnourishment that our people had to endure. And so Denmark Vesey knew firsthand how brutal the islands were. And so the seeds of liberation were planted in this brother from a far, far time, young age. And so as he grew, he was, as I like to say, a spook who sat by the door. One of those brothers who listens, who waits, who says the right things, who's oh so polite. But deep down, there was something brewing inside the brother. The brother wanted to be a free, proud, and productive person. And he created what would have been the largest rebellion of African people that this country had ever seen. Unfortunately, the plan was, like many of the plans, sold out. Somebody dropped a dime. A sellout brother sold out all of the people. Denmark Vesey was hung, summarily hung, along with a number of other people. No shots were fired. No Europeans, no overseers were injured whatsoever. However, there were, I believe, 60-plus individuals of African descent, black people who were hanged. Denmark Vesey's son was kicked out of the country. They sold the brother, had made him leave the country. But Denmark Vesey is a name who should be researched, a name who should be honored, a name who should be exalted, and someone whose church, the AME Church, should be visited. There was a massacre associated with some of the AME churches. A lot of brothers who did a lot of good things came up in the AME Church. We're going to have to dedicate here at the Just the Freedom Radio Show an entire message, excuse me, an entire show to the AME Church and all of the scholars and warriors and forward-thinking people who came out of the AME Church. So be on the lookout for that coming down the pipe at some point. But again, Denmark Vesey, a scholar, a warrior, and a carpenter, and someone who has a statue in Charleston, South Carolina, that you should check out. His church home was Mother Emanuel Church. The church was the site of a massacre. 8 people were shot by Dylan Roof a few years back. Again, that is the AME Church that we're talking about. Denmark Vesey, a giant. Another giant. One whose name is familiar to you, I am sure. Again, we're talking about labor here on our show. Again, we're talking about Just the Freedom Radio Show. BlackHistoryUniversity.com is where you can find over 500 of our previously recorded shows. Those shows have been listened to over 30,000 times. That's right. This is no plaything. This is no side hobby. This is no little thing that we have here at the Just Freedom. It is a major production that has a long history, a long standing, a reputation of providing excellent entertainment as well as education or edutainment when you combine those two thoughts, educating, teaching, shining a light on the best of our history. We're doing our best, Leslie, our producer, and myself, to go down in the annals of time, to go down in history as some people who did work, some people whose name hopefully will be honored, whose names will be thought upon fondly for years and years to come. In the foreground of this photo, you see the outline, the silhouette of none other than 44, Mr. President Barack Obama. He was the president at the time that this statue was erected there in Washington, D.C. If you have not gone and seen this statue, it truly is a must. It is awe-inspiring. It is breathtaking. It is powerful, to say the least. I've made my sojourn. I have gone to D.C. Don't tell my prior employer, but I was there on a work trip. I skipped out on a workshop a little bit early so I can make my way on over to see this statue. Dr. Martin Luther King was a servant of our people. He woke up every single day thinking about black people. I'm convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt. There are some ultra-conscious folks who seem to have a problem with Martin Luther King. Some people think that you have to be in one camp, either the Malcolm camp or the Martin Luther King camp. You got to be in the Du Bois camp or you got to be in the Booker T. Washington camp. Why is there camps? Why can't our giants be mutually, exclusively praised, honored, and appreciated for their contributions? Martin Luther King is a hero of mine. He lived his life in honor and dedication to our people, oftentimes the least of these. When he passed away, he was in the state of Tennessee, city of Memphis. Why was he there? We're going to talk about it. I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm feeling, you know, the hair raising up on my arm or what have you. But a little more about Dr. Martin Luther King, then we'll talk about why he was in Memphis in a second. Born January 15, 1929, in Atlanta, Georgia. He was tireless working for black people. His final act was working on behalf of sanitation workers in the city of Memphis in the state of Tennessee. Many, 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 many times in this city of Memphis, our brothers who worked as sanitation workers, as truck drivers, and worked on those trucks, they're being crushed by the garbage trucks. They had extended hours. They had the most difficult routes as opposed to their white counterparts. They had less pay. They had worse schedules. Again, the conditions, it would be sometimes be rainy, sometimes be snowy, but our brothers had, our brothers were ill-equipped to do the job. And so, again, devastation occurred far too often. Our brother, Dr. Martin Luther King, saw it fit to lend his voice, lend his energy to the sanitation movement. We see right now in the NBA, some of our brothers wearing shirts that say, I am a man. I lost my visual here. Okay, we're back. Let's make sure we're still here. Oops. We've lost some connection here on the visual tip. However, the audio is still going. And let's see. We'll take a quick pause for the calls as we get our technology back going on Zoom. Again, you're listening to the Gist of Freedom radio show. I'm your host, Jamal Brown, a.k.a. Mr. Black 365. Let's see here. Recording. I am going to screen share here. Sorry, we are back. We had a slight technical issue, but we are back. All right. Martin Luther King was in Memphis supporting the brothers of sanitation workers. The slogan, I am a man. Again, some of our NBA brothers right now in Orlando, Florida, who are participating in the playoffs, they are wearing on their jerseys, the statement, I am a man. Where does that come from? It comes from the efforts, comes from the organizing, comes from the labor movement that Dr. Martin Luther King lent his energy to there on behalf of our brothers in Memphis, Tennessee, our sanitation workers. And again, it was at the Lorraine Motel on April the 4th, 1968, where our brother was shot on the balcony of the Lorraine Motel, only to die later at the hospital. But our brother, Dr. Martin Luther King, a giant amongst men, a fantastic and amazing statue that I recommend each and every one of you go and see. We're winding down our show here, but we have a few others. We weren't going to get to this individual, but we have it in the presentation, so we're going to talk about her. Reverend Florence Fearing Randolph. She was born in Charleston, South Carolina. I am going to personally dig into what is in the water, what is in the air, what is in the trees, what is going on. We have so many giants from South Carolina, particularly Charleston, South Carolina. Our brother Robert Smalls from Charleston, South Carolina. Denmark Vesey lived and worked and plotted in South Carolina, Charleston, South Carolina. Our sister, Reverend Florence Randolph, born in Charleston, South Carolina. What is going on that makes South Carolina so important? I don't know. We don't exactly know our sister's birthday. It's either August the 6th or August the 9th, but the year is 1866. She was one of the first women in the African AME Church. Once again, as I mentioned, we're going to have to do an entire show dedicated to the AME Church and how great folks continued to come out of that church. She was one of the first women in the AME Church to be ordained as a deacon. She, again, did much by way of education as well. Truly a phenomenal sister. She eventually went on to the New Jersey area. There is a placard that stands in New Jersey that is dedicated to her. Let me read a portion of it here. It says, New Jersey, registered of historic places, and was designated a historical landmark. The AME Church, the 48th quadrennial session took place there. A great revival took place. And this sister was, again, a spiritual leader, a religious leader there, and did much by way of education, much by way of civil rights and human rights. Truly, truly a phenomenal sister far before her time. We're going to dive more into her on a future episode. We are coming to the end of what has been another great show. Again, I am your host, Jamal Brown, a.k.a. Mr. Black365, founder and creator of the Black365 calendar, found at black365.com. You are listening to the Gist of Freedom radio show, blackhistoryuniversity.com. Blackhistoryuniversity.com is where you can check out all of our previous shows. There is over 500 shows that exist there. They have been listened to over 30,000 times. Do yourself a favor. Use these recordings to supplement the education that is taking place in your home. Get outside of your home and go and check out some of these statues. If it's in a 50 or 100 mile radius, I recommend get out, breathe some fresh air, see some of this God-given beautiful land that we have. Visit some of these historic sites. Hashtag Black Scouts. Hashtag Black Scouts is the hashtag that we are asking each and every one of you who are listening to this show to use as you go, and visit some of these sites. And also, we want you to give us feedback. We want you to direct our show. We want you to provide us with names and locations and statues and historical markers, family reunions, all sorts of things that take place in your purview, things that you know of, individuals that you know of, individuals, instances, ideas that you are aware of that you believe that deserve a spotlight. We will shine that spotlight. We will provide the voice. We have the platform to elevate and accelerate the education around all topics dealing with the gist of freedom and self-determination. Any individual who lived a free, proud, and productive life that you feel is worthy of honor, let us know about them. Use the hashtag Black Scouts. We will find it. We search the hashtag regularly, keeping an eye out. But you need to go forward for us and be our scouts so that we can bring forth to the masses good information about the best of our history. That is what we do here on a weekly basis at the Gist of Freedom Radio Show. Again, I am humbled. I am honored to be before you. My name is Jamal Brown, a.k.a. Mr. Black 265, and we'll see you on our next episode. Peace.